Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie.
And I'm Sonia.
And this is episode 10, Come the Apocalypse. So this is a crazy episode, and by crazy, I mean crazy good. I really enjoyed rewatching this. It basically picks up right where we left off in the last episode, which, for a quick recap, the last episode ends with Rogue deciding she wants to stay a mutant, and Angel, Warren Worthington III, he's going to go for Dr. Adler's cure. Now, we know that Dr. Adler is Mystique in disguise, and Mystique is working for Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, we really get a little bit more intimate with the character of Apocalypse.
Unsettlingly.
He says a lot of insane things in this episode, but interesting things, because we really learn what his motivation is. So, anyway, the episode starts with Angel flying in. He gets strapped into this horrible machine, and right as he's about to be transformed, Dr. Adler reveals herself as Mystique.
Right, which I really didn't understand. Like, she straps him into the machine, and she starts, like, the laser beam sequence or whatever, right? And, like, that's when she chooses to transform back into Mystique, and, like, you see the look of surprise on his face. Mm-hmm. What?
Well, like, that's just, I mean,
but, like,
it's good.
Why?
It's good you don't understand, because that's, like, a really evil thing to do to somebody.
Right.
That's totally terrifying. And then Apocalypse himself comes out of the shadows, and he's talking with Mystique. He's very pleased about the situation. And he says one of his first of many creepy lines in this episode. He says, "I want to hear the cries of a future being born." And right. Then Angel starts screaming in horrible pain.
Right. They zoom out on, like, the laboratory, and the sheets of rain are coming down. You just hear him screaming.
Yeah. So it's, you know, Apocalypse presents himself as quite the terrifying being.
And it's interesting also because when he comes into the laboratory as Mystique is starting that transformation process with that big machine, like, it's like a split second, but you see her, like, look up and, like, see him standing there, and she's, like, surprised to see him, but you see this, like, look of terror pass over her face, and it's, like, really quick, but you see the power dynamic there right away.
And that's the theme that I think will reprise itself as this episode goes on. Mm-hmm. So as Angel's being horribly transformed in the rain at this laboratory, we cut back to the X-Men, who haven't gone home right away, which I thought was kind of funny. Normally, when they're done with the mission, they just hop on their plane and assumedly
jet back in the Blackbird.
Yeah, here they're hanging out on Muir Island. Maybe the Blackbird needs more gas or something. So they're in that mutant bar again from the last episode. The reason there's mutants in this bar is because they've all gathered over the rumors that Dr. Adler can cure mutancy.
I think that's why the X-Men haven't gone home yet, is because I think they know that there's unfinished business there.
Yeah, there's like this is a huge deal in the history of mutant stuff.
Right.
But now, compared to the last episode, there's even more clamoring for this cure.
Mm-hmm.
So mutants around the world are really getting wind of this, and which includes some mutants we've already met.
Some of the Morlocks are
Morlocks are there. Specifically,
who knows how they
Pestilence.
Got plane fare to Scotland.
Well, you know, I mean, they could have. They've got mutant powers, so their ability to get money, either legally or illegally, might be not too hard for them.
Okay.
So specifically from the Morlocks, we see Pestilence, the sort of like middle-aged woman. I don't know. It's to me, I really liked this like random gathering of mutants in this bar because some of them just are dressed in regular clothing,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are wearing like crazy X-Men outfits,
mm-hmm.
you know, like neon colored body armor and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and you wonder if that's because that helps control their mutant powers, or if they were superheroes in another country or something.
Right.
So, but then there's like a mix of just mutants wearing, you know, jeans and like a button up shirt.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who later becomes War he's got like a bowl cut and just like a button up shirt. So it's a nice mix, and the X-Men are trying to, like, scope out the scene, and it's at this point that Angel busts into the bar without his wings, and he's proclaiming that the cure works. And this pronouncement really causes a stir with all the mutants in the bar. They're desperate for this cure. And, I mean, I like this moment because it just shows in this X-Men universe how mutants, the oppression, the shame, the terrible destructiveness of some of their powers, it's just like driving these people crazy. And they're just desperate for help and a cure.
Yeah, but I also like that it spurs this conversation among the X-Men themselves, because they're sitting at a booth in the bar, and they start talking about how, you know, like, all these, they feel bad for all these people that don't really have a place to go and, like, feel secure and cared for.
Why don't they invite them to the X-Mansion? They could be X-Men.
Right, okay, so that's, like, one part of it.
Why is Professor X not, like, offering up a well, there's different solution to these people?
They have an ideological difference, and
I know, like, but he could say, like, listen,
can he really,
like,
house, like, 100 extra mutants?
Yeah, that house is big.
Yeah, okay.
He's got an underground, like, lair that has holographs in the mountains. Like, he owns a lot of real estate.
Okay. But I mean, I think what I also like about this is that it's, you know, they're talking about mutants, which is totally, like, not realistic, but it's also kind of a, there's parallels with the real world, right? This is how, like, a lot of kids and teenagers feel.
Right.
Like, they wish they could change something about themselves. Whatever they are is not good enough. There's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of it, when they do have a sense of community, whether it's family or a group of friends or whatever, where they feel at home and it's okay for them to be a little bit weird. And
that's why I think it's weird that Professor X doesn't speak up in this moment and offer an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in this moment is that Cyclops challenges Angel to a fight, more or less.
Yeah.
Angel, who's secretly Mystique, so it's all con. But anyway, he's like, look me in the eye and tell me that, in reference to Cyclops saying that, you know, mutants should just be happy with who they are.
Uh-huh.
And Cyclops is ready to destroy this guy, which I think is funny because it's not just Wolverine, but, like, all the X-Men have itchy trigger fingers when it comes to using their powers in public.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, Cyclops has got a huge temper, too. But, you know, it's like I said, like, Professor X is, like, a prophet in the world of mutants. You know, he's a famous guy that's been established in the show too, I think. Well, maybe not just quite yet.
I don't think he's so famous. It's just that he's rich, right?
Well, he's rich, but, you know, in like an episode or two later, they're going to show that he goes to Congress, he testifies.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, the point is, like, he's well known. You know, he's a professor, and he's got immense power himself. It's just, like, kind of surprising that he... This is a moment that is, like, meant for Professor X. Like, this is how he might recruit mutants to his cause, and he does nothing. He just lets the X-Men almost get into a fight. Or, actually, that's not true. He's kind of even more passive in that moment. Doesn't he say something like, we have to let each mutant decide what they want to do, and Rogue kind of agrees with him?
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, again, like, ideological differences. He's up against this, like, mob of mutants that are not on the same page as him, and he recognizes that they each have to come to their own decision, and it's kind of in line with what we were saying about how, like, he's powerful. He could just, like, invade everyone's mind and, like, brainwash them. But because he's benevolent, he doesn't do that. He allows people to,
think for themselves. You'd still think that he might evangelize a little bit because, and we see in the coming scenes that Apocalypse is really all about evangelizing.
Yeah.
Everything he says are, like, the words of a demented preacher from hell.
Uh-huh.
So it's at this point where it's revealed that, you know, Warren Worthington is no more. He's now Archangel. And I just want to talk about Archangel really quick because I think this is, like, the 90s Archangel. And I think it's just an awesome character look.
Yeah.
So basically he's got this, like, sky blue and pink spandex outfit with weird... like
the metal wings
with metal wings. His feather wings are gone now. He's got, like, metallic wings, and he's got these, like, cool patterns on his outfit,
and his face paint is crazy.
Well, it's not face paint. He's actually, his skin turns blue,
but he's got these, like,
well, his hair is still yellow,
but, like, the patterns on his face are very, like, theatrical.
Right, but that's actually part of his mask.
Okay.
So it's like he can take that part off and he'll have, like, his yellow hair underneath.
Yeah.
So the treatment, whatever, has turned his skin blue. Like, maybe it's, like, drained his blood or something.
Mm.
And And he's got these big metallic wings now that can shoot these, like, poisonous metallic arrows that are seemingly of unlimited supply. I don't know how he regenerates them.
Right. It seems like that's one of those, like, Spider-Man things where it's, like, is it a cartridge or is it, like, part of... Is it something that his body manufactures at this point?
I think they're just, like... I think they're just feathers. They're metallic feathers that grow much like his wings might have grown feathers.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, like, bizarre and weird to think about. But the wings are awesome. I remember loving this character as a kid in the comic books. You know, he can... They say... I think he can... fly, like, faster than the speed of sound. He can break the sound barrier with the metal wings, which always fascinated me. Mm. You know, as a kid, I was at, like, a garage sale, and I saw the first issue where he's transformed into Archangel. Mm-hmm. It's, like, from an X-Factor comic. I forget which number, like, maybe 15 or something. I don't know. I should remember. But I bought this comic for, like, $15, and I thought I, like, really got a deal that I... You know, first of all, that I hoodwinked the people selling the comic, and this was a historic comic, the first appearance of Archangel, oh my god. Uh-huh. You know, it was, like, so amazing. And then, to this day, I still think it's worth, like, $15. Nobody cared about it as much as I did. So that was, like, my first and only entry into the world of speculative historic comic book buying.
Well, it's still a good read.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it was really cool. And so, like I said, evangelizing. So we Apocalypse, you know, Archangel is revealed. He's totally brainwashed into being a slave of Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. The machine worked. And so Apocalypse has some, like, totally insane lines where he explains this philosophy. He says he wants to build a new world in fire and blood, and that the evil of human and mutant must be cut away, and that essentially he wants to rebuild a better world from the ashes of this old one. Mm-hmm. And then I have even more, like, insane lines of his that I just think are really interesting to just, like, imagine trying to see where he comes from. He says that the meek and afraid shall be smashed, and I am Apocalypse, look upon the future and tremble. He's so, like, theatrical.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's kind of the thing here, is that, like, we meet Apocalypse and we hear him talk in, like, all these really insane ways.
Yeah.
We don't really know, like, his backstory yet.
Right. No, that's not revealed for a long time. I think in, like, maybe even the fifth season they get to his backstory.
Right. And everything he's saying is kind of cryptic and, like... I don't know, like, some kind of contorted biblical type of language, but, like, we don't really know what he means.
But that's so crazy. And then here's another line that I thought was amazing. He says, each generation has cried out for a new world, but builds the old one, corrupt and weak. And that's, like, true. You know, and from a philosophical perspective and a sociological, historical perspective, that's the history of humanity, that... The new generation wants change generally and wants to make something new and something their own. Maybe not change, but, like, inherit the world in a new way. Mm-hmm. But really what they do is they repeat the old world, and it's just, like, an endless cycle of the same thing, but with, like, different clothing. And, you know, I guess there's steady progress of technology, but not always, because there's the dark ages sometimes, you know?
Like, yeah.
Like, sometimes humanity stagnates in that direction in science, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, still, like, you don't really know what he's saying when he says that. It's like, okay, fine, it's true, it's, like, a historical trend, whatever, but, like, what is he getting at? Like, what's he gonna do next?
Well, his plan is to completely, completely wipe away everything and everyone. He mentions at some point he wants to get rid of the systems that control everything and mm-hmm. just start over.
Right.
So, and, like, rebuild the world from ash.
Right.
A better one. Right. He's not specific about what that means.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a little bit. It's, like, super fascist. He says something that, like I said before, when he wants the meek and the weak to be smashed,
uh-huh.
he wants only, like, super strong beings to emerge. And he doesn't care if they're human or mutant. It's just, like, he wants, like, a new breed of strength or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially, like, the tenet of Nazi ideology, is that they believed the weak needed to be crushed so that only the strong could survive.
Right.
Like a demented Darwinism or something.
Yeah. I mean, one way or another, you definitely come away with an understanding that he's evil and what he's doing is, like, not in line with Professor X's...
Oh, no. He's, like on a whole level of madness.
Yeah.
And Professor X says that himself in a later scene. He says, this is not like Magneto, where you could reason with the guy or have an argument, you know. Apocalypse, he says, is like a mutant driven insane by his own powers and so powerful that he could see it through.
Right.
And that he must be stopped at all costs, which is scary.
Right, and Professor X has to kind of give that speech to justify what happens next, because then he basically sends the X-Men to go destroy Apocalypse and his horsemen, or at least stop them.
Well, yeah, completely stop them. But, and also, it's a huge disaster what's happening.
Yeah.
So Apocalypse is now in Paris, and he crashes this Paris peace conference that's going on, and he announces all these things where... Another one of his insane lines, he says, "Fools, you bleat for the future like a herd of sheep. I will show you the future," or something,
Yeah.
He says, or that's where he introduces himself. He's like, "I am Apocalypse. Look upon me. Look upon the future and tremble." And that's where he unleashes the Four Horsemen. And so the Four Horsemen are these people that we met at the bar. So there's War, the bowl cut guy, and his power is seemingly to like clap his hands together and green laser beams pop out. So, not too crazy. He didn't give him that much power. I mean, that's the power of Cyclops.
That's not the only thing that he does, though, because...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, then, they show that there's, some missiles being launched.
Oh, right,
and he makes that same movement. He puts, the palms of his hands together over his head and some, light shines, but then, the result is that all the missiles get, diverted. They turn back around and
maybe it's like Storm's power, where she could reprogram missiles with her electricity.
Right.
It's like something's going on with mutants being able to control missiles with their powers.
A little bit of fuzzy science.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's War. And then there's Pestilence, who is one of the Morlocks. And she's, on top of... I don't think she gets new powers. She's got the same thing we saw in the Morlock episode, where she just touches people and they get sick.
But now she can fly.
Yeah, well, she has they all have flying robot horses,
which
are... It's really cool robot flying horse technology.
That is pretty cool.
They're not seemingly propelled by anything. There's no wings. There's no rockets on them.
Right.
They just sort of...
They just fly.
Yeah, they're really awesome. But the difference is that she's given a makeover, too. She's not like a dumpy old woman. Now she's got sort of a slicker, neon face and more interesting hair.
Like a spandex red outfit.
Yeah, she looks like she's in better shape. And then there's also one more horseman is Famine. She was like an old, sad woman at the bar, too, in the bar we saw her just touch a flower and it dies.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess now her power is that she flies over some peasants in a village and she casts her electricity or whatever, or her fog of famine, and they immediately lose all their weight and they're starving. And that's a really terrifying power, to cause famine in general. And the last horseman is Archangel, who we've been introduced to, but his other name is Death, which is ripped from the pages of the Bible, too. And so what's going on in this scene is it's the Paris Peace Conference, and the Four Horsemen are causing massive terrorism at this event. We see Pestilence give these poor French soldiers the plague. We see Ward shooting laser beams at them. At one point, the Eiffel Tower gets exploded.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one national landmark destroyed already by Apocalypse. It's kind of sad. I mean, we don't see if it gets destroyed. I think we see a helicopter fly into it, and there's a huge explosion, and the tower begins to bend, but they cut away from it really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a huge moment. That's to blow up the Eiffel Tower. It's not quite 9/11 because there's not people in it, but it's as terrifying an image.
Yeah.
So Apocalypse is really causing massive, scary terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then we see some of Apocalypse's powers, too. So his powers are totally insane. He's a shapeshifter like Mystique, but can also transform his body or his suit into shields and to other sort of shapes to crush people like sledgehammers.
Mm-hmm.
And he can grow in size.
He can change his size.
Yeah, really large. And he can also, I don't know, he can make himself disappear at moments too.
Right.
His powers are kind of all over the place.
Yep, and we see just,
dangerous.
A little sampling of that.
Yeah, a little sampling. And you know, the X-Men arrive in Paris to fight the Horsemen, and you know, the first Horseman they take out is Pestilence, and to me it looks like they killed her. You know, like you hinted at before, that Professor X is like, they must be stopped at all costs. Mm-hmm. What they do is Storm creates a cloud so Pestilence can't see. She's flying very high in the sky on her horse. Cyclops shoots her. She falls like 200 feet, lands on a metal bus.
Right. Like laid out on her back.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, she's out of commission for a little bit. And like,
it turns out she's alive because Archangel then saves her.
Yeah.
But I don't know how she survived that unless Apocalypse made her super strong too. So, to me, that was like, the X-Men, like, are trying to kill these people.
Mm-hmm.
and then what else happens? But meanwhile, Rogue is on her own mission. She's trying to figure out what's going on at Muir Island with Dr. Adler. And it's there she finally discovers that Adler is Mystique. And Mystique explains that, like, oh, I had to do it. Apocalypse was going to kill me. But then she kind of... the tables turn against mm-hmm. Rogue, and, you know, Mystique shoots Rogue in the back, and as she's escaping, she explains to Rogue, no, I'm actually way down with Apocalypse. He's the future. No one can stop him.
Yeah.
So
well,
I can't tell if her whole, like, humanity about the situation is like, oh, he captured me, he was going to kill me, or if she actually is, like, into his, you know, theory.
I think she... is just trying to survive. I don't think she, like, cares one way or another, really.
Right.
It's just that, like, first Apocalypse threatens her life, so she's on his side, and then Rogue threatens her life, so she, like, gives Rogue what she wants to know, and then, like, Rogue sets her free again.
Right.
But, like, ultimately, Apocalypse is a bigger danger to her than Rogue is, so, like, she changes, like, her tune a little bit again. But I don't think she's ever pretending to be on the side of the X-Men.
She's on her own,
like,
side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She's got her own weird agenda. And Mystique's an interesting character because, like Wolverine, her powers have allowed her to live way longer of a human lifespan.
Yeah.
I think she's like 150 years old or something. You know, she doesn't age.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a super insane complex backstory in the X universe.
Mm.
You know, I mean, she's... I think she's secretly Nightcrawler's mother. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, she's also, you know, it'll be revealed in a future episode, spoilers, that Rogue and Mystique have a very deep backstory themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot going on with Mystique. So she's like her own force.
Yeah.
Of nature. She, you know, and it's just weird because sometimes she's the stooge of a various villain, be it Apocalypse or Magneto. Not so much Magneto on this show, but in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other times where she's off, like, on her own adventures.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mystique is an interesting character. And, but she does let slip that Apocalypse's secret base is underneath Stonehenge. And like the Eiffel Tower, Stonehenge gets destroyed in this episode. So this is, like, some pretty big news in the X-Men world that, yeah. Like, in one weekend, Eiffel Tower, Paris is attacked, there's famine in the countryside, because famine's all flying off, giving peasants famine. The Eiffel Tower's destroyed, soldiers are getting the plague, the whole French army has the plague now, theoretically, presumably, and now Stonehenge is knocked over. So mutants are out there causing serious destruction.
Yep.
And so the action shifts to Stonehenge. Rogue is really trying, not so much try to track an Apocalypse, she's trying to find Archangel.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mission Professor X gave her. And it's at this point I sort of feel obligated to mention that Apocalypse blasts Rogue and her jacket disintegrates. And it's the famous scene of Rogue, like, splayed out on the ground with her butt showing.
Why do you feel obligated to mention that?
I don't know, because everyone on the internet has this image out there
uh-huh.
of Rogue. Like, it.
I mean, she still has clothes on.
Yeah, she does, but it's
just very, like, voluptuously drawn.
Right.
But it's because
tight.
Of, like, the angle. Like,
yeah.
It's
just very sexually provocative. And if you were a 10-year-old boy at the time, as I was, you remember that scene forever. And no one, and apparently the internet has not forgotten it either. So that's the only reason I'm bringing it up. It's just, I'm embarrassed to bring it up, but it's just worth noting. And you'll know what I'm talking about if you watch this episode. So, but moving on from that, there's another fight at Stonehenge, and the Four Horsemen are pretty easily defeated this time by the X-Men. And it, to me, it just shows that, like, the X-Men have all this training. They believe in their cause way more than these brainwashed Apocalypse mutants do. And the Four Horsemen stink compared to the X-Men in mm-hmm. terms of fighting. And Apocalypse is really surprised by this. He's like, what? I made you guys to be awesome, and you're just as weak as everyone else.
Yeah.
And he's so flummoxed by it that he just runs away.
Right.
And it's weird because he's got so much power, he could just crush the X-Men with his foot if he wanted to. But he doesn't even bother fighting them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand that, but maybe he just feels like they're totally inconsequential. But, like, yeah. amidst the fighting, Rogue decides, like, she's got to do something mm-hmm. about this. She's got to really, like, take them down a notch. So she flies up behind Archangel mm-hmm. and, like, with her bare hands...
Absorbs some of his energy or whatever.
Yeah. And she turns blue in the face for a little bit. But it, like, magically sucks the evil out of him.
Yeah.
And, like, then he's, a normal person again. He keeps metal wings.
Yeah, he's redeemed.
Cool.
Yeah.
But
he keeps a blue face.
Right. And he says something like, oh, you know, I hope you're strong enough to
handle this evil.
Right. But she seems totally normal.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, the evil's inside me now. But, like, the way she's, like, talking and acting.
She's fine.
Is, like, 100% normal
Her. It does come back in future episodes. We see the consequences of Rogue having absorbed Archangel's, like, life energy or something.
Uh-huh.
So it's not, they haven't really closed the chapter on that book.
Okay.
But it is interesting. And they have a bond now. Rogue absorbs, mm-hmm. she gets some a bond with them some way,
mm-hmm.
And that'll be explored more too in a future episode. It's actually these episodes are nice because they've really built up Rogue's character a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really explaining who this woman is. She's very interesting. She's got a really sad, tragic story herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this episode too, we see her get sexually harassed by Gambit again. There's this cute little scene where they're all playing pool in the X-Mansion. It's like Jean Grey, Rogue, and Gambit and Storm all hanging out. And Gambit says something. He's like, maybe the winner of this game gets a kiss from the loser, huh? And Rogue is just, again, she's just, like, really hurt by these come-ons from him.
Yeah.
She doesn't even know how to react. And Jean Grey kind of sticks up for her. And she embarrasses Gambit somehow with his pool shot.
Uh-huh.
And then Storm 2 also kind of, like slams Gambit in a stupid, corny joke as well. So, I mean, the women are sticking up for Rogue. But, you know, Rogue's, like... It's hard for her to deal with this Gambit guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, cut back to Stonehenge. Apocalypse escapes. He destroys... This is where Stonehenge is destroyed. Because his, like, interstellar spacecraft that he keeps...
under Stonehenge?
Yeah, under Stonehenge emerges from the ground and blasts off into the sky and disappears in, like, red lightning as if it's going into hyperspace. And that's really cool.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, and to get a little geeky, that... points to a little bit of Apocalypse's backstory. It's not that just he's a mutant. His suit comes from these beings known as the Celestials, which are the super ancient, like, highly advanced technological race in the Marvel Universe. And I think the backstory is something like the spaceship crashed with Celestial technology, and Apocalypse in ancient Egypt days found it, and he put on the suit, or maybe they gave him the suit. I'm not quite sure. But he's powered by technology from space gods, more mm-hmm. or less. And that's basically where the episode ends. So Apocalypse hightails it into outer space, which is very fortunate, not only for the X-Men, who he could have easily killed, but the world at large.
Yeah.
Who just in, like, 24 hours, Apocalypse shows how he could just destroy the world if he wanted to.
Right.
But it's kind of weird. He's, like, real prissy about it. It's like if the world isn't destroyed exactly as the way he wants it, he, like, has to go into hiding and reformulate a whole new plan.
Right.
He doesn't just take it upon himself. He wants, like, people to do his bidding, even though he could easily do it, you know? He could literally turn into the size of Godzilla and just stomp over New York City if he wanted to.
Yeah.
And just kill everyone. And, you know, it doesn't look like he needs to eat or drink anything either. So it's not like he'd run out of energy. So
I don't know. It's just...
So to be continued with Apocalypse, right?
I guess.
Any other thoughts on this? I mean, I think this is a great episode. It's just the themes are just so heavy... Like, they're heavy-handed, but in this really... subtle
way.
They
just really, like, packed a lot into this episode. Yeah. Like, it was, you know, the standard episode length, what is it, like 20 minutes or something. But, yeah. like, it really felt like a lot of things were revealed.
It was very well written. I really enjoyed this. Like, I don't understand what the lesson for children is in this episode, because the things Apocalypse says, they're so demented. But they're not, like, demented in a cartoony way. They're demented in this, like, way that really touches on, like, biblical themes, philosophical themes, themes about just, like, madness. Mm-hmm. But, like, madness in a true way, where if you were, like, totally filled with power, how would that corrupt your mind? Mm-hmm. And for him, it's not, like, he's very organized with his thinking. It's not like he's off on some tangent of lunacy. He's, like, he's got, like, a viewpoint. And he wants to act it out on the world stage.
Yeah.
And that's like incredible stuff for, like you said, a 20-minute episode where we have a scene where they're playing pool at one point.
Right.
So this is, like, just one of the greatest episodes of the show, in my opinion, because of all that. They lay out and they pick up these themes in future episodes. Mm-hmm. Apocalypse comes back. He continues talking about this stuff. His plan evolves to get even more deadly and more insane,
mm-hmm.
and even more abstract in a awesome cosmic and psychedelic way too. I mean, a lot of the stuff happens in season 4, so we're not even going to get a chance to see it all play out yet. But it's like, so the show, I think, is really hitting its stride right now.
Yeah,
and it's going to continue with the next episode, Days of Future Past Part 1, mm-hmm. which is a total classic. A classic two-part episode. So you have to come back,
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah, I'm really excited for these next couple episodes.
Yes. They're going to be really good. It's like, and if you think the show isn't depressing yet with the destruction of the Eiffel Tower and Stonehenge, just wait. Things are going to get a whole lot bleaker. So that's all I've got today for the X-Men Task podcast. Reminder to follow us on Twitter, @WillieSimpson. You can follow me. Follow us on Facebook, the X-Men Task Podcast. Just search us out. We're a Facebook group. Just join and we'll add you. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Write us a nice review. That'd be nice. Share it with your friends. Let everyone know. And that's it for tonight. So I just want to say goodnight.
Goodnight.